What's good? What's good? I'm back. One and only Paul Masson. Another live from Vietnam Friday. We live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And we're about to bring on a special guest here soon and whatnot. I see him waiting. I don't see his camera up just yet. But as you know, every Friday we got special guests. Every Saturday we're doing music reviews live as well. Submit your MP3s to livefromvietnam@gmail.com. And I know a lot of people out here in the music industry freaking out because of the TikTok ban that's about to go through possibly tomorrow or the day after. A lot of people wondering how that's going to go. We're going to see. I wouldn't panic just yet. Let me text him real quick. Let him know I don't see this camera yet. I see the the link was clicked, but I don't see the camera showing up just yet. And I hope everybody's doing all right out there. Weather was kind of nice today. Can't complain. You know, North Carolina weather, we flip-flop. We like 20, 30 one day, and then the next day we like 60 or 70. I don't see his camera popping up yet. Give him a little bit of time to figure it out. Oh man, trying to text him real quick, see if he what's up with the camera. I know last week we interviewed Wednesday I interviewed one of the UMC's, Cool Kim, and whatnot. Oh man, what's up with my phone? It won't let me text. Phone does not let me text. What is going on? My dog's over here on the arm of the couch just staring at me. Let me text him real quick. Oh, hold up. Oh, here we go. Here we go. All right, so I think he switched over to another device, and we about to bring him on right now. A lot of y'all cats might know him. He's out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And was down with No Limit, Master P. And let's bring on the one and only Young Bleed. Bleed, how you doing, man?
I'm pretty good, my brother. What about yourself?
I can't complain, man.
Yeah, I had a little few technical difficulties, man. I had to switch devices. But so far, so good, man. Hanging in now.
It's part of the game, man. We used to it in this podcast world.
Mm-hmm.
What you over there sipping on?
Some E&J, man. Some throwback, man. Some Earth and Jerk, man. Yeah.
What's up?
Earth and Jerk, man. Crown Royal, you know, anything.
Okay.
I ain't gonna say anything. You know, some of the good stuff. I'll put it like that. Yeah.
So, you know, doing my research. So I want to start here with your influences. I guess it was saying that your mother was one of your biggest influences to start making music. Is that true?
My greatest, man, really is my true life evolution. When I was still inside my mother, I had an uncle, you know, shout out to Juwan Rotmine, man, you know, aka Warren Johnson. I like to tease him about that. He became Muslim later on and changed his name. But my mother, brother, one of her brothers, man, he and coming from a musical family, but he played drums, everything African, eccentric, congos, bongos. Okay. A whole set, the old bow, the African piano. So he used to play drums, you know, when I was inside my mother. And what she had described to me is that I turn over in her stomach and be going crazy every time he played those drums. You know what I mean? So I tell everybody, I'm born this way. You know, what Rakim say, rap is rhythm and poetry. That was my rhythm. And my mother was my poetry. She read me Dr. Seuss when I was still on the inside. Okay. When I was born, between 8 months to a year, I could read Dr. Seuss. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's been there. That's my rudiments, man.
Now, I saw where it said you started recording and selling tapes throughout the neighborhood. Now, was that how you ended up signing with the local record label?
Eventually, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I started recording demo tapes about 11 years old, 1985. Started writing. Wow. Really was kind of freestyling about 8, finding my craft and, you know, my penmanship. But by 9, you know, I've been on the pen like Anita to a record since then, 1983. And 85, I found a studio in our town, and I've been recording ever since. It's 1985, 11 years old. So, yeah, that eventually, you know, of course, get me into talent shows and different things at schools and surrounding areas. And eventually we started selling tapes on the corner, man. My first demo, shouts out to Michael B. Williams, Todd Sterling, those guys, and Steve Sterling for that matter, man. That kind of in one sense discovered me and turned me on the radio world and so on and so forth. And eventually, you know, the rest grew into history. Yeah.
Now, I seen you had a group in like 1995 called the Concentration Camp. What could you tell us about that group?
Absolutely. I'm really the founder of the camp, birthed on CeeLo Record. Shouts out to CeeLo, the big homie that used to be my DJ in middle school when I was about 11. He might have been 12, but he was one of my DJs. I had DJed since 11 years old. So we always had this rap dream, and eventually we're growing at different things in our teenage years. Shouts out to Lee Time. But they started a label called CeeLo Records after Michael B. Williams. Now I had a song called Much Love, Barcades, and the Friends Summer from Houdini meshed together. And that was my first radio record with about 16, 17 years old. So we knew each other from the neighborhood. And when they would birth that label, we started to grow as a label. And as other members came involved, I decided, you know, we needed a name for a whole, you know, a whole clickalation name, more or less. And that's how pretty much the camp is born. You know, it's my idea at the time. New York had the boot camp click, you know, shots out to the BDI, you know what I mean? Those guys.
Yeah.
Shot, and you know what I mean? That type of thing. So we down here listening. You had a boot camp click in New Orleans that birthed, you know, Mystical Fiend, Black Men.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of what was the name that'll solidify all of us, you know what I mean? So we became in one sense like baby Wu-Tang Clan out here, man. And that was the name for the Concentration Camp. Yes, sir.
Now, so speaking of CeeLo, you did a song with CeeLo. It was called How You Do That, which was remixed by Master P.
Yeah.
How did that whole situation come about where he ended up wanting to remix that song?
Well, really, when Loke started his label, he really put out 2 solo records before that. One was called CeeLo, Who's Gonna Ride, the second one was called Whatever. And like I said, as we started to morph, we decided to do a clickalation album. And once that name was birthed, it's self-titled Concentration Camp. So it gave everybody an opportunity, other than being background vocal to Loke and featured artists, to do our own solo joint. So originally that song was called A Fool, you know what I mean? Inspired by King Jack the Fool. And that was my solo effort to the record and to the world. And in the midst of him and P kind of converting and doing different things, you know what I mean? They liked that record and decided to do a remix to it that became How You Do That, you know, the familiar hook and phrase. And, you know, and I rolled with the Gambit, man, that led me into a deal with Priority Records in California, so on and so forth. But from CeeLo Records, you know, No Limit being the bridge into Priority Records. I always say P broke up my deal and got me in that situation. But that's the evolution of it. Yes, sir.
And that song was on the About It movie soundtrack as well, right?
Absolutely. Like Star Song. You know what I mean? So everybody liked that, and it grew its own legs and been running ever since. Yes, sir.
So you said P helped you get the label deal. Now, was there any talks that you actually signed with No Limit at that time?
Well, really, indirectly, you know, P, you know, it brought me out to No Limit headquarters one night and showed me a few things, but we never really talked about me doing that. I was still signed to CeeLo. I'm the first artist to sign to CeeLo Records.
Okay.
So I was still in a label situation. They was the 2 heads of the labels. So I was hearing the talks in the streets, but neither one of those guys had mentioned it to me directly. I could see what was in the atmosphere. And like I say, in the evolution of that, excuse me, everything took off so fast. And before I know it, the deal that I was offered was straight from Baton Rouge, Louisiana to Los Angeles, California, Priority Records. And, you know, that's the history.
Now, your album, My Balls and My Word, which is a Scarface saying, drops in 98. I mean, it did very well. Number 10 on the Billboard 200 and number one on the top R&B and hip hop chart.
You did your homework. Absolutely.
And gold and platinum status in the U.S. I mean, what was the feeling like at that time?
A dream come true. When I'm talking 1983, a long way from New York and California would get their evolution. You know, shouts out to Rap-A-Lot and really Luke Skywalker Records and Rap-A-Lot for us, the birth of hip hop and records into the industry, for us being kids and having an outlet and looking which way to go. So to me, an ultimate dream coming true, man, that I had worked for and hoped for all my life and prayed for. And one day it took place in that form. You know what I mean?
Now, I was listening to a lot of your songs when I was, you know, creating these posts with the graphics, and it felt like you had a lot of West Coast influence in your music. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, but see, the truth of it is, before then, any guy that knew me, when I battle rapped at school and different things like that, all my homies out the neighborhood just say, man, you got to go to New York somewhere with all, you know what I mean, with that, and you will really get on. But the way it happened for me, it's just how I described it to you. So I tell everybody more, you know, more or less nowadays, I'm Southwest raised, you know, from Louisiana into Texas, in the Texas scene. I'm going back and forth. And then, you know, God said to me one day, you're going farther west and farthest west. And, you know, I used to go on the levee and look at the Mississippi River Bridge. You know, I-10 is the interstate on your way to Houston. So I knew I'd been going to Houston, you know, family from Houston, been going to Houston since a baby. So where I hadn't been was California, you know what I mean? And at a perfect time, but yet a death-defying time after the death of, rest in peace to the late, great Tupac Shakur and the late, great Christopher Wallace, you know what I mean? So about like 6 months after the death of Big, no, really 3 months. After that March, 3 months later in June, I was out in California signing with Priority Records in 1997. So I picked up that West Coast vibe, and, you know, having family roots and heritage, it sunk me all the way in. So I got yet to be New York. I'm friends with Doug and Fresh and some of the great people. Rest in peace to Biz Markie. Out of New York. But my evolution took like kind of like the back route. I didn't go to the East Coast first. The West Coast brought me in, accepted me, and embraced me. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, your follow-up album was called My Own. Now, that one was released independently. Whose decision was that to release the next one independently?
Now, the truth of it is, I had a seven-album record deal with Priority Records. Okay. So Priority released that as well. They only put out two records. Then they'll come to their great fold by the time I was recording my third album, Vintage. So Vintage, I went back into independent. But Priority mass produced My Balls and My Word and My Own Record.
Now, you ended up leaving Priority. Was it just them not handling business properly and stuff like that, that we always hear in the industry?
Basically, like I say, they folded as a company and merged with Capitol Records. Yeah, that type of thing. So I was in the studio when this was taking place, working on my third album here again, Vintage. And from that, you know, I mean, what you do when the rug falls from under your feet or the flow fall out, you know what I mean? I had created this name and so on and so forth. So to keep up with the masses, yeah, the people that opened the doors for me was Selecto Hits out in Memphis. So I started a label, shouts out to Uncle Paulie, you know what I mean? From originally the CeeLo Records and then eventually the Concentration Camp and the Carleon family. We put our minds together. He became my personal manager. So we started a label called Detention Home Entertainment just to keep a label, to keep records coming out. You know what I mean? So that was my rebirth back into the independent world, going into Selecto Hits from Priority. Yeah.
And then you ended up signing one time with Strange Music with a subsidiary called Strange Lane Records. What was it like on that label?
Oh, man. Wow. rebirth and regeneration. Because they was like, if not, I believe so. And I'm going to say it correctly. The number one independent rap label at the time. So people used to ask me this question. Yeah, how you go from No Limit being the number one independent on rap label at the time into Tech N9ne and them. So being blessed and having a bridge between the gap, shouts out to Dave Winer from Priority originally. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So he became vice president over there at the time. And we stayed friends since Priority. So, you know, when he could turn the lights on for me, he did that. So, yeah, basically that.
And you was only on that label for like a year?
A year, maybe two. You know what I mean? I did like one tour with him, 2-3 months or something like that. And, yeah, you know, we ran into some differentials that wasn't really a personal thing, but a choice they made at the as a label. So it forced me back into an independence. Yeah.
And then I've seen you had an album called All American that kept getting pushed back. Did that album ever release?
No, I never actually released that album. I had some ideas and due to contractual situations and what was current at the time. Yeah, that's a record that I still have on the shelf that's been unreleased for that many years. Yeah.
And you also had Trapdoor Entertainment. Do you still have that?
Is that that's my current label. I really started Trapdoor, like you mentioned, signing to Strange Lane. We really did a co-op deal, and it was half between Strange and Trapdoor Entertainment. You know, we missing the logo because I had just birthed it and was still trying to figure what logo I wanted to come up with. So when you look at the preserved album, it's a missing blank on one side because I didn't have a logo for the record, being honest. But since Strange Music, Trapdoor been birthed, you know, over 10 years span now. So yeah, as a matter of fact, hopefully next Friday I'm releasing a compilation called Welcome to the Trap, the rebirth the label. So yeah, I'm working on that as we speak.
Like, how do you, like, Louisiana's had a lot of artists come out, man. I mean, where should they place in hip hop history probably be? Up there with everybody else, you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, hip hop is so diverse and international at the same time. Yeah. It's the Third Coast, you know what I mean? Like the Texas boys would say, we became the Third Coast, extended from Texas all the way up to Florida, you know what I mean? Tennessee, Arkansas, you know, the South is 11 states, and up northwise and Midwest and to the East Coast, Virginia, a lot of people forget this, Virginia and Kentucky is a southern state as well, you know, past the Mason-Dixon. Yeah, so that part of it. So we the Third Coast. So we are just another branch of the Third Coast, man. Absolutely.
Now, how do you feel about this new wave of artists in Louisiana?
It's just like every other wave of music to me. You know, music never just been one thing. You know, I go from African music to gospel to blues to jazz before we get to hip hop. We all pulled out of those crates to create hip hop. So hip hop, again, is so diverse now. It's so many forms of it. You know, it's probably, you know, for whatever remaining record stores that exist, moms and pop stores, you know, it's probably the biggest section of records in the store. Because you got Christian rap, you know what I mean? You got horrorcore. Yep. You see what I'm saying? It's not one thing. When I remember in the 80s, when people were saying rap was a fad and it'll fade away, but it hadn't faded away. It didn't spread like the blob. And we still here today, man, celebrating 51 years going into this year of hip hop, man, in 2025. Yeah.
Now, I know I could tell, like, every other state, man, everybody had New York influence at first, but it seems like Louisiana was a state that's like North Carolina, where we like Midwest artists, we like West Coast, we like up north. Is Louisiana pretty much like that as well?
Well, I say it depends on how old you are. And, you know, I'm not ashamed of your age, man. I celebrate every day of life and definitely every year of life. So here again, last year I was able to go out into a few places and help celebrate the 50 years of hip hop. I'll be 51 years old. So when I say I'm born this way, I'm born right with it. You see what I'm saying? So if you wasn't here for the evolution of hip hop, you might not know nothing about 70s and the 80s. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? And the 90s, you know, the late 80s into the 90s going into the West Coast. So it depends on when hip hop became apparent in your life and who your favorites was. But I remember that golden age and era going back to Busy B and Cool Moe D and the Sugar Hill Gang. You know what I mean? Cold Crush Crew. I could speak like that. I actually used to steal MC Shan Rhymes because I had a cousin used to go to New York every summer and record, you know, the act from Kiss FM. Shouts out to Red Alert. Rest in peace to Mr. Magic. That Mr. Magic on the East Coast. We know Mr. Magic, my guy, rest in peace, down here from the Night Water of New Orleans. But I remember having those tapes and hearing Rakim and those guys for the first time when the South didn't hear that. Because I'd get those tapes before it hit the record store and hit the radio station. So it depends on your time and era, you know what I mean, to really put that in the box.
So the 50th year celebrations you did, those were in Louisiana?
Actually, Jackson, Mississippi here again. Shout out to Dougie Fresh. We shared a stage for the first time. I've been on stage with Doug, you know, up north. I lived in Virginia. I said, tell everybody this. I lived in 41 states at least a weekend just in the travel. But I had a chance of meeting Dougie Fresh in Pennsylvania somewhere. Then living on the East Coast, they had a whatever year that was, they had the new Fresh Fest. So I'm backstage with guys like Dougie Fresh, rest in peace to Kango Kid, Dr. Ice, L.A. Sunshine, DJ Cool from out of D.C. Here again, Biz Markie, Big Daddy Kane, Salt and Pepper, you know what I mean? That type of thing. So I'm still watching them pack a house, you know, from the bottom of the floor to the top of the ceiling like it's 1983. So that part of it, man, you know what I mean?
Now, do you got an album or a song or something for you that just stands out as, like, your most memorable?
From me directly or just hip-hop in general?
Just you directly.
I got a lot, man, and I toot my own horn. Like I say, you know, I didn't grew the catalogs now, so we got to go between records. You know, everybody know, you know, and this be my test with the fans. If you don't know me past how you do that there, you really don't know me. You really didn't do your homework and research. So we'll have to go album for album. Why the World Loved That Record, my favorite joint on that particular album was The Last Outlaw. You see what I'm saying? You know, I'm a hip-hop head and a lyrical monster. So, you know, that gave me a chance to display my lyrical display versus, you know, and how you do that too for that matter. Yeah. But that was a record that was on that record that I could really spread my wings in a Southern West way. If you listen to it, it's a, you know, it's an outlaw cowboy song. So growing into that type of thing, what was happening after the birth of Tupac and the Outlaws, and my homies, you know, that type of thing, I was growing into the West. So I felt like an outlaw spreading across the plain. So real life is not necessarily commercial, but as movie cinematic as that may sound, I was able to take that and put that in a lyrical way, not being New York lyrical or West Coast, but going into the West Coast lyrical, but in an outlaw physical form, you know, still at a mental spiritual at that type of vibe, you know what I mean, was my favorite song off of that particular album. And from that, it's song for me. I got a plethora of records that I love in particular. It's just reaching my peak for me and what I've been striving so much since a kid to get to be respected on the East Coast from New York to California is my plateau.
Speaking of respect, like, how important is legacy to you?
It's everything. You can't run without your legs, man. You know what I'm saying? So I do my homework. You know what I mean? That part of it, and being accepted and respected by guys of all coasts, Midwest, up north, East Coast, West Coast, down south, worldwide, and throughout the world. You see what I'm saying? So the growth to that from being from Baby Baton Rouge is everything to me. Yeah.
Now, is there any artists in, like, Louisiana that's coming up that you know about that people probably should be looking out for?
Yeah, I always keep my feet to the ground. You know what I mean? Well, you know, what we say, ears to the ground, eye to the sky, you know, that type of thing. So I know a lot of unknown underground artists that's monsters all over the place. So for what's known and what's unknown, definitely, you know what I mean? I'm family with Boosie, NBA Young Boy, you know, shouts out to Kevin Gates, Liv Webby. So I watched this. I come from a place where that didn't exist. And it was a few OGs along my time and even before my time. Shouts out to Super Slim and the Bottom Posse. It's my big cousin. You know, the first time I saw real records in the neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? From the guys that I grew up with. So that was a great inspiration to me as well. So, yeah, the list go on for days and days. Rest in peace to MC Nero. So many crews. Everybody don't reach that commercial plateau. So what I learned here again, living in 41 states, I always go, but, you know, I always say underground up. So I know a lot of guys from the underground that I hope that's still alive that reach they just do so the world could hear what I'm hearing. You know what I mean? So it's infinite for me.
I got a few more questions and then we're going to let you do some shout outs and whatnot.
Okay.
How do you feel about this digital era of the music industry?
In one sense, it's inevitable. You know what I mean? You can't stop the rain from falling. You know, that type of thing. So it exists. So it's just like racism and everything else. You have to learn to live with it or live without it and find your way around it. So it is what it is. It's different from, you know, definitely the guys before us. And in our time, we were still doing sound scan and different things like that. You say that nowadays, you people, you know, depending on your age and era, you might know what we're talking about. We're talking about 8-track tape, ADATs, and different things like that. It was a different way that we had to communicate and record and ship the music around. Now it's the push of a button. So long as it's a beautiful thing, I'm with it. I just don't like the bullshit that come with the game for a social media, so on and so forth. But if you know what you got, bro, use what you got till you get what you need, y'all. That part.
Well, there's something interesting you said about navigating around it. Like, either, you know, use it or you don't. Now, like, something like streaming, is that something that you think artists can just navigate around and just say, screw streaming and just go with, like, because people are saying we need to get back more to, like, physical products and just direct-to-consumer model, you know?
Yes. I believe it like this. Anytime you're taking away from that physical person, I think that was the Dog Pound or somebody that I watched, you know, we good friends and family. And Snoop, even for that matter, saying, if we can't count the streaming, I can't count my money. And I'm putting work in, so don't try to outlaw us like they're doing with the robot factory nowadays. People need jobs. We still got to live out here. So, you know, where there's poverty is crime. You see what I'm saying? So it go to the powers that be that's controlling the game. Yeah. You know, with a hologram and different things like that. I understand that to some degree with Tupac and Eazy-E. It's the only guys I saw, if not Michael Jackson or somebody like that, that you can still see a show closer you can get to a physical form and a hologram. But when we can't count our money no more or sell physical copies, then that's taken away from the people that's making the music. We can AI all day and, you know, become an imitation of life. I believe in God and real life first, man. So power to the people when it comes down to that. Yeah.
Now, being around P, Master P, did you apply anything that he did in the business world to what you did?
Absolutely. You know, for the record, you know, and P know I say this to him face to face, over the phone, and whenever we talk, I say people can say what they want to say about P for his lyrical skills and hip hop and all this type of shit. But he one of the greatest entrepreneur niggas that I know, man, if I can say that for the record. Hell of a man, hell of a hustler, bro. And of course, I'm taking pages out of his book. You know, multi-millionaire at the time when I saw him, you know, his crystal bottles bigger than I could stretch out on the page. You know, Versace shirt, shit I had never saw before. And I saw it in Baton Rouge sitting on his desk. You know, he took me to tours through houses and homes that he had gold tanks in the swimming pool and black onyx and diamond shit, a gold toilet and shit like that. So from that, of course, you know what I mean? So, you know, that part of it, bro, here again, being one of the greatest entrepreneurs and still to this day, you know, he again, one of the greatest hustlers. When you look at his manufacturing process and everything that he continues to come up with, whether you like it or not, you don't stop till you get enough, man. So absolutely. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Now, you got any new shows coming up or any new projects on the way?
Definitely. Like I mentioned, Welcome to the Trap. Hopefully it'll be released next Friday, 7 days from now. Shouts out to South Central Cartel. We start a tour on the 31st in a couple of weeks. in Macomb, Mississippi, and we're trying to keep that annual. We going around the country with that. Shout out to the queen out there in Macomb. You know what I mean?
You talking about my man Black Havoc Stone. And Prodigy?
Havoc and Prodigy is the homies, yeah, man. You know what I mean?
True. Yeah, I know Havoc, Kerry Calvin. Me and him pretty good friends.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, you know, you know, the government better than I know. We just recently connected. Of course, we knew about each other for years. They were in the game before I came in the game. But we got a movement going on, man. That's called Upset. The tour is called Upset, the Setup Tour. Of course, it's going to be streamed on RTV. It's a new network that, you know, by way of the Queen in Mississippi, in Macomb, Mississippi, to be in particular. That's taking place for those that can't show up for that. But we starting that tour here again on the 31st of January. Shouts out to my man, Baby Savage. We'll be touring around the country doing about 40 more shows. I've been rocking with him for years. The Guard of Grand, you know what I mean? Guard of Grand Chain, you know what I mean? It's my guy. He a Baton Rouge native, but grew up in Shreveport. So that's one of my guys over a 20-year span that we always work together in a plethora of ways. And hopefully this Royal Love Tour takes off in St. Louis on the 25th, which will be next weekend. You see what I'm saying? So I'm a part of three tours right now, officially, and just waiting for everything to go down and connect. And, you know, and so on and so forth. You know, I'm an open door. I keep a light on. So every day is something new. Absolutely.
It seemed like you don't have any problem getting shows.
Man, you know, here again, power to the people. You know, thanks to God, we talking almost 30 years later. You know what I mean? Yeah. New generation, old school, you know, no school rules. You know, like Dougie Fresh would say, everything is cool, man. I see guys and girls dancing. So that part, man, you know what I mean? I just, you know, take my place on the totem pole and be continued. Long as God wake me up and give me the breath to breathe. And keep me relevant in this day and time and in future times. Yeah, I'm here for the taking, my brother. Always.
All right, before we let you go, man, any shout-outs you want to do?
I always say the world, man. I always thank far as I could thank all the way back to the heavens, for starters. But in particular, man, the whole Carleon family, everybody that's an affiliate and supporting Trapdoor in the Trapdoor Entertainment, you know, all friends and family and everybody that's in support of Young Bleed, you know what I mean, and my legacy being continued. So much love, respect, peace, and God's blessing, my brothers and sisters, always.
Well, I want to shout you out, man. Appreciate you taking the time out to do this. I'm going to make sure I clip up some clips and also do music reviews on Saturdays. So you got the email if you want to send any MP3s to review. Sure would love to,
okay,
man.
Okay, yeah. Beautiful, my brother. You know, we are. I tell people this. You fuck with me, you stuck with me. We friends and family for life, my brother. I appreciate
well,
you bringing me.
I'm stuck with you, man. I'm stuck with
hey,
you.
Hey, yeah, my left titty, man. Forget about it. You know, that part. So I'm going to keep you posted on everything that's taking place. Shouts out to my man, Mr. Matthew, man, out there in H-Town. I'm doing a record with Lit Young, the first and only Latino artist from Swisher House that's called Full Circle. Okay. So I'm working on 20 projects right now. Actually, with Prodigy and those guys, we're doing a record called L.A. to L.A. We call Louisiana Baby L.A. You know what I'm saying? So we're doing the L.A. to L.A. record. I'm working with the producer Swift that produced for Cardi B, doing a Baton Rouge to Brooklyn record. So, you know, all coast, man, by coaster, man. You know what I mean? It's going down. So y'all, you know, keep taking a look around. We out here. Y'all know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate it, man. I'm going to stay in touch, man. I got your number. I got your email, man. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Okay, you too, loved one. Have a blessed one. You heard me.
All right, peace.
Peace.
Wow, man. Yeah, man, Young Bleed is cool as hell, man. Cool as hell. He was dropping some names. I mean, he definitely know his hip-hop. He's 51. Hip-hop is 50 years old. He was definitely shouting some names. Yeah, peace to Young Bleed, man. Thanks for being a real one. And like you said, I'm stuck with him. Appreciate everybody's tuning in on Instagram. I know my man Johnny still on, said dope interview. Yeah, I thought it was a dope interview too, man. Thought it was a dope interview. Can't wait to clip those clips up. Master P got him his deal. Seems like he don't have no problem doing shows. And like he said, he was literally, you know, his mom's was reading poetry to him while he was in the womb, and his uncle was playing the African drums and all types of what did he say, African piano and everything, man. That's crazy, yo. That's crazy. Shouts out to my man Johnny Dozier 73 on Instagram. Johnny_Dozier73 on Instagram. Y'all go follow him. And definitely follow my man John Jones. John Jones, why don't you post your Instagram so I can shout it out in the comments? I want to talk about, before we go, I want to talk about this TikTok ban. And what it means for the music industry. What does it mean for the music industry? And what does it mean, not just for the music industry, for content creators, for small businesses? I'm hearing two different things. I'm hearing TikTok ban goes through that people that have it downloaded will still be able to access it, but won't be able to update it. And if it has bugs or issues later down the line, you won't be able to really updated to fix those bugs or issues. On the other hand, I'm hearing that TikTok saying, hey, if they're gonna ban it, we're just gonna shut off the servers. And let's sink in. What does that mean? When we're gonna shut off the servers? That means they're gonna shut off the servers that they use for the US people to access TikTok. They probably got servers for different countries. One server for this country or multiple servers for this country or whatever. So there's, when they shut off the servers, I mean, I don't know if the info, I mean, the info should still be intact, like the accounts and the videos and the data, all the data should still be intact. And they probably could just shut on the servers later and the accounts will come back up. But I know how people are, man. Once they get in a routine of not doing something after a while, they just stop doing it. It's like COVID, man. If you noticed, like, all those shutdowns, people couldn't go dine in for a while. And even when they opened restaurants back up, a lot of people still was not opening up the dining rooms for a while. So people were just going through drive-through constantly. That's kind of why somebody like Bojangles creates a new store and they do drive-through only, because they realize, oh, people don't even dine in no more because they got out of the routine of doing it. You know, they so used to not going to dine out no more because of COVID. They just don't go dine out no more. And people are actually just getting it through drive-thru, go home and eat, or they're just getting some food and taking it home and cooking it like my man Jones did earlier. You know, they're just going to go to the grocery store and go home and cook it itself. So if they shut off the servers, hey, it's definitely got, you're not going to be able to access it at all. Screw updating it. You won't be able to access it. Now, if they ban it, you can still access it. That just means no new people will be able to download it and join it. They won't be able to download it. They'll be able to join it. You know what I'm saying? Shouts out to my man, Christopher Porterfield. Appreciate you tuning in, man. So you could go maybe some months or a year maybe where the app doesn't have any issues and you don't really got to update it. But then again, like me and my man Johnny were talking about, how's the algorithms going to be affected with the ban? And if you can't update it, how's that going to affect the algorithms? I'm pretty sure it's going to have an effect. So for content creators, if they shut down the servers, and for small businesses that make money on TikTok, like people are selling, you got a TikTok shop. So people are selling products on TikTok. My man Johnny's wife sells like ornaments on TikTok. People are selling all types of things on TikTok. So it's going to be hard for them to sell anything on TikTok if the algorithms are affected. And if they shut down the servers, ain't nobody going to be able to sell anything in the U.S. on TikTok. So it's going to affect small businesses. It's going to affect content creators. And it could put businesses out of business. It could make content creators have to go get jobs that probably ain't available. And if, like, businesses ain't making money on TikTok and content creators ain't making money, that's less money in the economy to tax and flowing through the system. That ain't good. That's going to fuck up the economy some, even more. It's going to fuck up some people's lives, some people's businesses, and all types of things. Now, in the music industry side of it,
Let's look at where do record labels break music? Where do record labels break music? Well, I could tell you where they don't break music. They don't break music on radio anymore. They don't break music on radio no more. Record labels break artists on YouTube? They can, but it's going to cost you about $250,000 to do, like, you know, Murray and them. They spent probably at least $250,000 on advertising for Murray's single. And he's still not really popping like he probably could be, you know. So that's not even a guarantee that it's going to resonate totally with people to something that's going to be sustainable. So do record labels break artists on Instagram? Not really. I mean, you could pay influencers on Instagram, but you're going to have to pay a lot of influencers. They're going to be expensive. And the thing about Instagram is you can't, it's not like TikTok where you can duet. If an influencer does a post, they could duet it. They could take that video and they could react to it. They could stitch it. They could do all these different things on TikTok. And then not to mention, TikTok is the first platform that actually pushes content to your non-followers. Instagram's not really pushing content to your non-followers unless, I mean, they do now, but not in the same way that TikTok does. Not when you got like 100 followers on TikTok and you could get 70,000 views on a post, because I've done it before with 100 followers because they just pushed it to so many non-followers. But like Instagram is only going to like, they're going to trickle. It's going to be a trickle effect of how they push it to non-followers. Facebook rarely pushes it to non-followers. They're big on shadow ban and everything. I literally just took a video from Instagram, downloaded it, some girl shaking her butt in the tub, uploaded it to Facebook, and they tried to damn restrict my account to like November, and I had to appeal it. So like, yeah, man, Facebook is over there like shadow banning, censoring. And they're literally shadow banning, censoring content that's already on Instagram, which is what they own, which is a freaking hypocrite. So the record labels, man, need they need TikTok to break music. TikTok is breaking 70 songs. I mean, that dude, Bobby Caldwell, that nobody even knew was white, his song got rebroken on TikTok. We would have all died and not even know Bobby Caldwell was white until damn TikTok freaking broke his song again. And that's because of influencers. Influencer marketing. It's all about influence nowadays. If you ain't got influence, you can't get engagement. I mean, you can create discussions to get engagement, but that only goes but so far. When you got influence, you know, everybody that's on your page is engaging. So for the music industry, it's like, the only platform they really got to break artists on right now is TikTok, because they're not breaking them on radio. Nobody's really street teaming no more. They're not breaking artists that, like on YouTube like that because it's so expensive. With TikTok, you can just pay one big influencer and a bunch of other influencers just fall in line, just like the L'Angelo Ball song. It was just one influencer does these posts and then all these other influencers that are cool with him start doing something to it as well. So, yeah, without TikTok, man, why the hell would an artist need a label at any point if record labels can't even break your music at all no more? They lose TikTok, that's it. They're not breaking them on Spotify. They're not breaking them on Apple. None of these streaming platforms are breaking artists. Spotify is not breaking new artists. All they do is add them to some editorial playlist. They might get 20 or 30,000 plays, but that's not going to break you. So for the music industry, they're fucked like Chuck. They have nothing to offer whatsoever no more to an artist except money. And maybe touring opportunities, but touring is getting so expensive, man. Like, some cats don't even be wanting to tour no more because it's so expensive. Like Jordan Lucas and then broke this down. It's just too expensive to tour, man. You don't always make money, man. Sometimes you just damn near break even. So yeah, we're gonna see what happens with this TikTok ban. It's supposed to go through on the 19th. So I'm thinking we wake up on the 20th and we'll know whether or not they cut off the servers. If you wake up on the 20th and you still got TikTok on your phone, I'm going to say, TikTok didn't cut off the servers. And I'm thinking like TikTok is trying to play the long game here because Trump is talking about possibly like trying to reverse this ban. And there's a bill that they're trying to present to get a extension. And, you know, knowing these politicians, it'll probably just get voted on tomorrow. And who knows, like tomorrow they might vote on it. And it might pass through, and it'll be 267-day extension, and then people will be able to breathe easy. But at the same time, if you get dependent on just one platform, that's a problem. That's a problem. Let's speak on that. Like, getting dependent on one platform. That's why I post to Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, all these. Because sometimes a post will do better on YouTube than it will on TikTok. Sometimes it does better on Instagram than YouTube and TikTok. I got a post right now on Instagram that's got like 10,000 views where I said Eminem's last few albums are trash and I used the sound in the back, the I'm Not Afraid song. And that's getting a lot of engagement. I got hundreds and hundreds of comments. Of course, half the people agree with me and the other half are just like saying I'm batshit crazy because I don't bow down to mediocre music. Shout out to my man John Jones. The game has certainly changed. It's changed, but Young Bleach just said it himself, man. We can navigate around these streaming platforms. We've let people dictate and tell us what we can and cannot sell. We let record labels tell us, oh, you can't sell records no more because nobody cares about those. You can't sell cassettes because nobody cares about them no more. You can't sell CDs because nobody cares about them. But I'm seeing dudes with big names, independent artists who are established, selling package deals with cassettes and cassette players, CDs and CD players. And then, you know, there's not enough unsigned artists trying to really focus on their merch. Everybody's trying to make it off of their music. Like, who's making off the music nowadays? Who's doing that? Who the hell is making it off of the music nowadays? Maybe that cat Ray Vaughn or something that signed with TDE, but who's making off the music nowadays? You think if you think LiAngelo Ball just got this Def Jam deal because he made it off of the music, you're dumbing in a bag of bricks, man. Part of the reason the song went viral is because half the motherfuckers are clowning it, and now half the motherfuckers that are clowning it are literally, you know, using it to clout chase and to get engagement and to get clicks. I mean, cats ain't making it in the music business because of talent. I'm going to tell you that right now. They're not making it because of talent. And definitely not talent alone. It's everything else. It's the image, the red hair, the blue hair, the pink hair. It's all the face tats, it's all the antics of whatever they might be doing, wearing a diaper at South by Southwest or whatever they're doing to get attention. You know, it's all this other stuff. It's their lifestyle, it's perpetrating a lifestyle. It's this reality TV show aspect of, you know, watching them like they're, you know, some unsigned artists like the Kardashians or something. It's all that. It's putting yourself out there as a reality TV show and people deciding they want to watch it. I mean, people watch the Kardashians. People watch Love and Hip Hop. People watch The Freaking View. I mean, you just got to put it out there. Pretty much give all yourself to the internet and see who rock with it and don't. And that's the thing, part of going viral is a lot of the people that don't rock with it are gonna post to their accounts too, just to shit talk it. They gonna post, like, I could care less if 1,000, if I get 1,000 reshares, I could care less if every last one of the motherfuckers get on there and shit talk the post. Y'all all shared it to y'all's following. It's like what Eazy-E said, the guy playing Eazy-E in a Compton movie, straight out of Compton, said, they talking about, they took the cassettes and they ran him over with a steamroller. And he was like, yo, man, just make one rap song and everybody goes crazy. He's like, I don't care. They bought him shits. They could do what they want to with him. That's kind of how it is. That's how I look at it. Like, if, what do I care? You shit talking me. You done promoted me. You gave me free promotion to your followers. Appreciate it. Siskel and Ebert gives you two thumbs up for that. You did me a favor. Because I could tell you right now, I don't make content for people to like me. I'm not a star of the show, man. The stars of the show is the people that I interview. Young Bleed was the star of the show tonight, not me. Young Bleed was the star of the show tonight. Great guy, said some funny ass shit in there. And real story, real life story. You know, a guy who's been in the industry, seen the ins and the outs. You know, he was the star of the show, not me. But yeah, man, this TikTok shit is it's gonna be interesting. I'm not really freaking out. Because even though I do TikTok marketing, a lot of my clients just don't get it and don't understand the power of TikTok still yet. And I think they hear this TikTok about to be banned. So they're a little wary, you know what I'm saying? But the thing is I do TikTok marketing. I don't just do TikTok US marketing. So it's not like I still can't provide TikTok marketing. And it's still, and we don't know how the distribution part of that's going to go. Like, just because TikTok is not available in the US doesn't mean your music's still not going to be on TikTok and not available for people all over the world. And if you think people are breaking themselves by just having US fans, I mean, then you know nothing about the music industry and breaking music. Those overseas markets are far better, especially for a lot of the cats that I'm interviewing. You know, they get most of their shows overseas more than anything. A lot of the cats I'm interviewing ain't getting shows in the U.S. like that here and there, but they doing whole tours overseas and stuff like that. Because overseas, just, you know, they don't just follow trends. They do, some of them do, but a lot of them are just want authenticity. They want to like what they like and think for themselves and not be brainwashed. And that's the thing. They don't got to deal with radio like we got to deal with radio, where they play the same 10 songs back to back to back to back to back to back to back. Like in America, we basically, it's like we've only accepted the option that the record labels and the music industry is throwing at us. When there's so many other options out there, you just got to go after those options yourself. You got to make a effort to go towards those options. You got to go digging in the crates on the internet. You know what I'm saying? That's like that cat Ray Vaughn. I think that might be one of my new favorite artists right now. I think that's named Ray Vaughn. He was, he did the song talking about Joey Badass, and a dude was spitting, man. Dude was spitting. And a lot of times you got to get the word of mouth. People, you know, when these underground names start popping and people start talking about them, then you know, oh, let me go check this cat out. But you got to make the effort to go check this cat out. When you hear the name being put out there, people saying, yo, go check this cat out and check that cat out. Like, we at a point now, man, where you can't rely on the music to come to you. You as a fan got to go out and find what you like and what you want. Because if you're just waiting for all these dope unsigned artists or independent artists to come your way, man, you're going to be waiting forever, man. You're going to be waiting forever because they're not being thrown at you. They're not being thrown your way. You know? And because independent artists only got so much budget to advertise and to reach so many people. So they typically have a core set fan base. And unless you know somebody in that core set fan base, you might not even never know about this artist. And there's so many artists out there on the internet now. Like, anybody thinks they can make music now, especially in the rap world. Everybody thinks they can rap. Because you got dudes that got the easiest flows and the most basic flows making it. Dudes with the most easiest rhyme styles, rhyme patterns, rhyme deliveries, rhyme lyrics, dudes that just rap ABCs, 1, 2, 3 rhymes are making it.
that's how you know they're not making it because of the music. They're making it because of their reality life that they put out there, reality TV show lifestyle that they put out there. And then people are just like, hey, that's part of it. The music is just part of it. It's everything else. I'm telling you, the music is just part of why these cats are winning. And it's probably a small part, to be honest with you, because all these cats got such big social media followings nowadays. They could all just quit music and just do something else. They could just get into acting, or they could just get into just selling nothing but products. They really can. I mean, when you got enough social media following, enough people checking you out, you could pretty much test the markets with anything you got going on. So about to wrap it up here. We just hit the hour mark. Let's gonna hit you with a quick Dizzle commercial break, and then we're gonna wrap it up.
Tropical Drink.
Me and my team will never be link up. They're gonna be drink up. We sit and relax and have few glasses when there's things to think about. Like I'm nice with the boss when I tend to the bars and I'm not talking drink up. So tell the bartender that's tending the bar to please pass me a big cup of. And tell that waitress is waiting on us to put a little ice in it. Now watch the ice become weightless like the spaceships that I be sitting in. No waiting list, another waiting for that tropical twist that'll tickle your taste buds. Now taste some. Now I insist it's the
Dizzle.
That's right, really mean it. You could Dizzle too. Dizzle is a premium luxury liqueur mixed with agave, tequila, cognac, and orange liquor mango mix. Throw your Dizzle on ice and it's nice. Want to get your very own bottle or bottles? Go to DizzleBrand.com. And shouts out to Mike Dizzle, the creator of Dizzle. That was him at the very end of the video. And shouts out to the legendary Chip Fu, one of the fastest rappers of all time, who did that commercial. Said I wasn't going to do music reviews tomorrow. I don't know yet. I might or might not. Been a long week. I just interviewed probably 2-3 fighters in the last week. I just interviewed Cool Kim from the UMCs on Wednesday. Go check out that interview. It's available on Facebook, YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Deezer, TuneIn, Stitcher, Slacker, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and much, much more. We just got Young Bleed tonight. Next week we got Chili Too Cold out of Fayetteville. I'm gonna try to interview at least one unsigned artist per month. I got Phantasm of the Cellar Dwellers at the end of the month. We already interviewed UG last year from the Cellar Dwellers, so it's only right we bring on Phantasm. And first week of February, baby, we got the Wild Cowboy himself, Sadat X. Wild Cowboy himself, Sadat X, who now lives in Raleigh, man, works at the hospital. Big up to Sadat X. And shouts out to my guy, Chris Roker. Olivio Harris just had a birthday. Shouts out to Olivio Harris, my guy who found and produced Adina Howard. Yes, I said Adina Howard. And Chris Roker used to work on Ruckus back in the days, and he's the son of the late, great Wally Roker, who sung bass for the original Heartbeats. Because we established over here. We know people. You know, your network is your net worth. I repeat, your network is your net worth. And I have a network. As you heard Young Bleed in the interview, you fuck with me, you stuck with me. I'm stuck with Young Bleed the rest of my life, man. Just built my network. And a great guy to be stuck with, trust me. We about to call it a night, man. This TikTok is going to be very, very interesting to see. I know it's going to definitely have an effect on the record label, but, you know, as the game changes, you got to adapt and change and adjust. I already know what kind of changes and adaptations I'm going to make. You know, I got into this business starting out with targeted Twitter followers with this software called TweetBig, and then when it ran into API issues, I started scrambling to try to do other things. And that's why I realized, hey, I got to do Facebook, YouTube, every single platform that's available for musicians that I could possibly promote on. I got to figure it out and I got to promote on them. I've done promotion on Reverb Nation through the years. They made some changes and I had to adapt from that. SoundCloud, I mean, and now kind of do more of influencer marketing and advertising more than anything.
running ads and paying influencers, the two best things you could do on the internet. Even search engine has changed. SEO has changed. Now everybody's using AI to do SEO and ChatGPT and all those things. A lot of things are changing, man. I do all my artwork on ChatGPT. I write up all my articles on ChatGPT. And go check out the article with the Vietnam bombers, man, that ChatGPT wrote up. I mean, it sounds so amazing, man. Even my man Johnny got an article we wrote up about him, man. It sounded like he was Jesus fucking Christ, according to ChatGPT. Let ChatGPT tell you, Johnny Dozier is Jesus fucking Christ, man, according to his interview. World's greatest fucking influencer out of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, originally from Vietnam. But I appreciate everybody tuning in, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Appreciate everybody that commented, hit the like button. Shouts out to my man Black Watch, tuned in earlier. So, yeah, next week we got Chili Too Cold, and I might do music reviews tomorrow. We'll see. Depends on how I feel and how many submissions I got to. Appreciate y'all for tuning in. Peace, and I'm out.